Headlines.
From miserable, rainy Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. On the right, I am political reporter and Republican Lee Stranahan.
And on the left, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
Welcome to the most disruptive talk show in America. It's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one today, the White House has announced a new commission on voter fraud and voter suppression. Critics are saying there's no voter fraud, but there is voter suppression. I will prove them wrong in round one. In round two, the firestorm over President Trump's firing of James Comey continues as James McCabe testified in front of the Senate today. But is the Comey flack all smoke and no fire? Finally, in round three, the Democrats' culture of bullying continues as Education Secretary Betsy DeVos was shouted down as she gave a commencement address, and a Republican congressman was shouted down in New Jersey. By the way, that's par for the course in New Jersey. Is shutting down free speech all the Democrats have? We will debate it in round three. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon Stranahan. Garland, I think I mentioned this to you earlier. I am bone cold, miserable cold right now.
Kind of one of those days.
It is cold.
Kind of a London kind of day in the nation's capital.
It is. It was beautiful yesterday, and it was miserable today. Our studio here is a couple blocks from the White House. I was over at the press briefing again today. Very frustrating press briefing for me. We'll talk about it, because I got half a question in, and we'll talk about that in round two. But I didn't have my coat, and so I had to walk over, and it's just miserable and wet and rainy. Now, there's good news, though.
Okay,
there's something
news
that makes me happy, which is the president is taking action on something that he promised and that he talked about, which is this executive order that was announced today and this presidential commission on voter fraud and suppression. Now, the suppression stuff is a joke. We'll talk about that. But the voter fraud stuff, this is a legitimate, real issue, and this is something that the Democrats like to deny. And by the way, I've got to point out, Garland, you're being very polite so far.
Oh, I'm quiet, man. I got stuff over here. I got numbers. I got all kinds of stuff.
I'll bet
but
you
I'm just kind of lying in wait, you know?
I got numbers, too. But let me point out what's going on with this. Let me just make the case first, and then I'll let you take it. What the Democrats have done, and the Democrats are very good at doing this. They're very good at it. Is the Democrats have set up what I call an undetectable fraud machine. I've seen them do this in other cases, like the Pigford Black Farmers scandal that I covered with my friend Andrew Breitbart years ago. But let me just explain it real briefly, and let me give an analogy, Garland. Let's say we had the drinking age of 21 as we do today, and let's say I passed a law that you were no longer allowed to check IDs when people went to buy liquor. Now, a couple of years down the road, the people who are in favor of that would say, let's say a couple of years down the road, you say, we need IDs for people to buy liquor. And they go, well, no, wait, there's no evidence of people buying liquor without IDs. And you'd be like, well, I know, because you got rid of the requirement to check the ID. Since you couldn't check the ID, how do we know if people tried to do it? And you'd say, well, we can point to some anecdotal evidence, maybe, such as this 18-year-old died in a car crash. And you go, well, we're going to ignore that, you know, because, yeah, you know, it wasn't a perfect system before. So what I'm saying is, when the system is based on you can't ask for ID, how do you prove voter fraud? And the answer is, it's almost impossible, which the Democrats know, because the Democrats want this. Now, that being said, let me just point out some numbers real quickly. And this comes from a press release from the Public Interest Legal Foundation. I'm just going to go over this real quickly. North Carolina State Board of Elections, 14 cases of non-citizens voting in 2016. State of Nevada uncovered at least 3 cases of non-citizens voting in 2016. State of Ohio, 821 non-citizen registered to vote since 2013. 126 of those cast ballots in various elections. In Illinois, one woman voted twice in 2016. 2 people voted absentee ballots in other voters' names in 2016. In Laramie County, Wyoming, 16 non-citizens. I didn't even know there were 16 non-citizens in Wyoming. in 2016. Now,
I didn't know that there were 16 citizens in Wyoming.
Now that whole
in 2016.
That whole those numbers are small, but I got to point out when you're not allowed to ask for ID, those are pretty impressive numbers. And the fact is, the system is set up and all these things that the Democrats put in place like motor voter are designed to allow and foster voter fraud. That's the actual issue going on. And the Democrats, and I know what you're going to do, not that you're a Democrat, but you're okay. But I know what you're going to do. You're going to say, well, there's no proof of it. And I'm going to point out, right, because they set up the system to not allow proof of it. If you're not allowed to check IDs, how do you know there's fraud? How do you find it? You're law enforcement, so I'd like you to, I know you got your thing to say, but I'd love you to try to explain that to me.
Well, I'll give you this, that you said voter fraud is pretty much undetectable. It must be because it's not being detected. But let's say we stay, you know what, here's what I'm going to do, Lee.
I just explained why, though, Garland.
Okay, so let's stay away from the numbers. Let's talk about a couple of things. Number one, this is about voter support fraud, not voter suppression. So I'll say this, what I'm supposed to believe. Now, here's what
By the way, the commission is on both voter fraud and suppression,
so here's
correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So here's what I would ask you to believe.
Which is wimpy on the Trump's part.
Here's what I would ask you to believe, Lee, and I don't think you'd probably buy this. If states that were controlled by Democratic legislature, right, passed some laws that were going to specifically benefit the Democrats, right? And then I'd say, but they did it for the, as they say in Robert's Rules of Order, for the good of the order. There was no intent to look out for themselves. Lee, I don't think you'd believe that. And therefore, let's just say this. I'm going to start here in a philosophical manner. It's awful hard for me to believe that a bunch of states, legislatures, that are pretty much all the voter fraud laws come from state legislators and governors that are run by Republicans. But it's not to benefit the Republicans. But let's just say I was naive enough to believe that. I'd look at some other things. Number one, Texas. In Texas, they allowed concealed weapon permits for voting, but they don't accept student IDs. How about this? Until it was struck down as illegal in North Carolina. Not that I'm saying that don't believe me, believe the courts.
Well, wait, is there a higher standard? What's easier to get, a concealed weapon permit or a student ID? What's easier to fake?
It's not easy. I mean, you got to be, first of all, let's say, they ain't giving you a student ID if you're not a student of that college. That's not happening. It's not easy to get a student ID. I would say equal because it's tough to get So then why would you throw it? Now, let me go to this. North Carolina, you couldn't get your public assistance or state employee ID cards, right? But, and last but not least, Wisconsin, somebody explained this to me. They permitted active duty military ID cards. But if you're a Veteran Affairs ID card, that doesn't work. There are a lot of things here that don't make sense if your intent is solely for the good of the order. You look at all of the closing places. You look at Texas closed like 400 polling places. So the bottom line is, when you add the other factors, such as closing polling places in colleges in predominantly minority areas, when you add, you can use your gun permit, but, if you got a permit for owning a Prius, you can't. Hey, if you got your Starbucks card, the bottom line is I'm being facetious here, but it's really obvious what's going on here. I mean, we can pretend that the Republican legislatures aren't specifically taking action to benefit Republicans. But, like I said, if you're naive enough to believe that, feel free. I'm not. And I don't think a lot of
Democrats
are.
But you're ignoring what the Democrats, first off, political parties tend to do things to support that political party's beliefs. But
I agree.
The widespread national issue and the national lie and the media reports this over and over and over again. Oh, there's no voter fraud. There's no voter fraud. There's no voter fraud. Well, right. So your law enforcement, explain to me, if the fraud, how can you detect if you don't check my ID? My friend James O'Keefe, let me talk about this. My friend James O'Keefe helped bring down Acorn. Great investigative reporter, has done a lot of undercover stuff. James has showed this over and over and over again, how easy it is to vote without ID all across the country. He showed it in Vermont. And what did they do? Or no, it was New Hampshire. It was New Hampshire, Vermont. It's hard to tell the difference sometimes. But I think it was New Hampshire. But anyway, one of those states up there, north of Massachusetts, let's say that. One of those states up there, James went in. He showed that there was so how easy it was. And they tried to bust him. They tried to arrest him for his undercover investigation that showed how easy it is. So just tell me, Garland, just from a law enforcement perspective, if you're not allowed to check ID, how do you know whether people are voting legally or not?
Well,
how would you know?
Here's what I'm going to say. That's a valid point.
Okay.
Now, it's a valid point.
I consider this a big victory.
No, it is a valid point, but here's what I'm going to say. That being said, you pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other. If you say without the IDs, you can't tell how many people are doing it, then how in the world does Donald Trump say 3 million people are doing it? The fact of the matter is this. If you argue that it's bogus for somebody to say they know how many people that few people are doing it, then you got to be arguing that Donald Trump is out in space when he tries to give a number. There's no possible way you can defend that.
I don't agree. Well, there is a way I can defend that. So
you can tell one way, but you can't tell the other.
No.
That doesn't make sense.
First off, I don't know if Trump's numbers are accurate. I'd like to get to the bottom of it. I think Trump throws such stuff out sometimes to be provocative. That being said, let's talk about it. How many illegal aliens are there in the country?
I don't know.
Okay.
Who knows? Nobody. They're undocumented immigrants. How could you count them?
Millions. So there's tens of millions. I've heard numbers from 12 million and higher. Okay. And by the way, there's more immigrants in the country than ever. That number is significantly higher than it's ever been. Not just as a percentage, but as an actual number. The number of immigrants, according to the census numbers recently, it's about 78 million. That's significantly higher than we've ever had. And as a percentage, it's much higher as well. So the number of illegal aliens in this country is huge. And they've specifically set stuff up in California to make it very, very easy for illegal aliens to vote. Now, you got to remember also, right before the election, and you may have missed this because it was big on the right, but right before the election, President Obama was interviewed by a Hispanic host and was asked a question. The question was basically, my illegal alien relatives are afraid if they vote, they could get in trouble with immigration services. And President Obama kind of chuckled and said, no, don't worry about that. No, nobody's going to get in trouble for voting. Now, again, this was big on the right because it was so stunning what happened. But the Democrats and the chief Democrat at the time, Barack Obama, have consistently been pushing this. Now, are there irregularities in the voting system? Absolutely. Can we talk about stuff like gerrymandering sometime? I hope we can, because gerrymandering is awful. But voter fraud is a real issue. And whether Trump's right and it's 3 million or 5 million, or a million.
Or as the numbers say,
or
like
half a million.
31 out of a billion. That's what numbers say, 31 out of a billion.
So you're saying, in a system that's set up so illegal aliens can vote, you're saying none of them. People who already broke the law by coming into this country, people who already broke the law by taking jobs that you're also not supposed to take. By the way, that's separate from coming in. You're not supposed to come into the country. And if you come into the country, you're not supposed to get a job illegally. That's a violation. So you're saying that these people who are so law-abiding that they broke the law twice, they would never vote illegally? Come on.
So here's what I'm saying. Two things. Number one, the issue in the Latino community has not been too many people voting. It's been getting people out to vote because the numbers have been low, like 20%. And consistently, the Democratic Party has been working the other way, trying to get Latino people out to vote because the numbers have been low. The black community has a very high percentage voting. The Latino community has a very low percentage. So the fact of the matter is that the numbers say the percentages are the opposite of what you're arguing in the Latino community. But see, and this is why I say it's voter suppression is the issue. There's a system that's referred to as cross-check. I'm sure you're familiar with the voter registration cross-check program that a lot of Republican states, conservative controlled states have taken. Now, what do they do with this? What they do is they look for names that are similar. First and last name, skipping the middle name. Your name is James Arnold Jones.
It is not.
Well, let's say it is.
Okay, James Arnold Jones.
They'll take James Arnold Jones and James David Jones, and they'll send both of them letters that say, oh, by the way, you're the same person, and if you don't respond to this letter, you're off the voter rolls. Millions of people have done it. It has been demonstrated, and I would advise all of the people, all of the listeners, to go to check out a movie called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy if you really want to learn about the cross-check program. It is clearly intended to purge the voter rolls of people who do not traditionally vote Republican. I can't get into it all, but again, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, that's the name of that. It's by Greg Palast. That's great, and it's, you know, we don't have the time to get into it now. But I understand what you're saying. Check out The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and you'll see that the cross-check program is intentional voter suppression. It is not accidental voter suppression. So, well, yes, the issue again, of voter suppression is there.
That's fine that you would bring it up, and it's fine with Palast would bring it up, because it's a leftist narrative. But it's not true.
It may
and
be a leftist narrative. It's a
leftist narrative that's designed to promote two things. Number one, the idea that the country is racist, and the idea that somehow things aren't fair for Democrats. The fact is, the number of voters and eligible voters, I'm looking this up right now, I'm looking at the Pew Research Center's key facts about Latino vote in 2016. Anybody can look at it. The number of Latino voters has gone up. It's gone up significantly, not just the eligible voters, but the number of voters has gone up significantly, right?
Yeah.
That makes some sense with the demographics. By the way, why did black people vote in large numbers? Real simple, Barack Obama. You know that's the case. The black voter turnout increased greatly because Barack Obama was running, and people historically wanted, and by the way, some white voter turnout increased because people wanted to vote for the first black president, right? But a lot of black Americans wanted to vote for Obama. So,
well, there was a lot of policy issues there, too. Don't fool yourself. The issue of health care, there was a lot of policy issues. Remember, most black people fall in working class, working poor, and poor. Obama put forth a lot of...
Well, that didn't work out real well for them, did it?
They put forth, if Bush hadn't crashed the economy, it maybe would. But
no,
my point being this, there were policy issues that Barack Obama set forth that were very, very attractive to the working class, the working poor, and the poor. And therefore, there were policy issues that attracted a lot of people there. So the idea that black people are devoid of policy knowledge.
I never said they were devoid of policy knowledge. But you
wouldn't be voting for Ken Blackwell, I'll tell you that.
You know the fact. You know the fact that if you talk to the ladies in the church hats on Sunday at a soul food restaurant here in D.C., it would be, I voted for my president. That's what they talk about. It's not about policy. It's I voted for my president. I love soul food.
But they wouldn't have voted for Clarence Thomas. Trust me.
Yeah, but Thomas wasn't on the ballot. But anyway, that would have been great. By the way, I would have voted for Clarence Thomas about three times. I would have illegally voted for him. Coming up, we have more of the issues you care about, both sides, on the most disruptive talk show in America. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
Welcome to round two in Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. There's a big firestorm in D.C. that's concerning the firing FBI director James Comey. There's a couple of other things going on. The Senate Intelligence Committee Wednesday issued a subpoena to former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn for his documents. There's some others. We got Roger Stone out there who's begging. He's begging. He's banging on the door. He's trying to get into the Senate hearing saying, please, will you allow me to come in and testify? But for some reason, they don't seem to want to hear what old Roger Stone has to say.
Oh, I know why.
But let's start.
Oh, I know Roger. I know why.
Let's start here. And I think this is important. This is kind of breaking news, okay? So let's start with some kind of breaking news here. And I think it's critical. So FBI Acting Director Andrew McCabe, he's testifying today, and he acknowledged for the first time in public testimony that some agents were angry with the 2016 decision not to prosecute Secretary Hillary Clinton, while also defending ousted Director James Comey. So here's what happened. He made this statement, and I'll quote him. I think morale's always been good, but there were folks within our agency that were frustrated with the outcome of the Hillary Clinton case. And some of these folks were very vocal about those concerns, McCabe testified. So here's my take on it. Let me give you my take on it, Lee. My take on it is that Andrew McCabe was one of the people who were unhappy with the outcome of the Clinton case. That, and here's why. He volunteered this out of the blue, just kind of matter-of-factly. They asked him about the morale of the FBI. He could have simply said, morale's fine, people have never been happy, or, well, there's been some bumps in the road. But he took the opportunity to insert this particular information where he said, morale's great, blah, blah, blah. But there were some people who were upset that Hillary wasn't charged. As you know, being, you know, one of the Bernie-crat people, I'm one of them. most of the Bernie Sanders supporters were amongst the group that had a oneness with the FBI agents that weren't so thrilled that Hillary wasn't charged, because we felt that that really it was obvious. The crime was obvious. You had a crime that did not require intent, but you still could prove intent. So my point being this.
And a crime really against Bernie, because the people forget that this whole email hacking thing, really the person hurt the most by it was Bernie Sanders.
Right.
I mean, that's what was revealed.
Yeah.
Was the DNC's duplicitedness. Duplicitousness.
Well, but with this, I think we're still talking. Yeah. We're still talking about the email server. And here's what's important about that. And that is because Secretary Clinton claimed that Comey cost her the election because he came out 10 days before the election and said he reopened the case. But according to Andrew McCabe, he saved her hide, because the other agents, and as I said, I will be willing to bet he was one of them or he wouldn't have brought this up. There were other people in the agency that felt she should have been charged. So explain to me how this man saved Secretary Clinton's hide and got some heat in his own agency to do it, and then decided to turn around in the other direction a few months later and take her out. The two things are contradictory.
Well, I agree. And look, Garland, I'll hand it to you. You're making a great point here. This is more of the BS narrative. And by the way, I'd like to apologize to Andrew McCabe for calling him James McCabe in the opening. That was my fault. But, you know, so I mentioned before, I was in the press briefing room today and freezing. And
they don't have heat in the press briefing
room? No, they do.
You were still cold from being outside in the rain.
I was just cold from being outside in the rain. Here's what it did. They spelled my name wrong. So I got into the first gate, but no problem. And then I had to stand outside for like a half hour because their complex security system couldn't figure out how to spell Stranahan. And so I had to wait out there. So
good thing you weren't in a Republican-controlled state. You wouldn't have been able to vote.
No, I
had to throw that in there.
Oh, my God.
It was a perfect
one. That was a good callback. I will hand you that one. But so I'm in the White House press briefing room, and they brought up McCabe's statement. But the way they brought it up, the media, by them, I mean,
the establishment, those whose names shall not be mentioned.
The establishment media, who I'll come back to in a second, but the way they
brought
it up. No, I will, because it's important, I think. But the way they brought it up was that they were peppering Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's filling in for Sean Spicer a couple days. They were peppering her with questions, asking her, well, you said that FBI agents had told you they didn't like Comey being in there, but what about this? Because McCabe is up there saying they did like him. Well, that's part of what they said, but he also said what you said.
Right.
They didn't bring that up in the press briefing room at all.
Well, right? Imagine that.
This is the sin of omission they commit all the time, the journalistic sin of omission they commit constantly. I'll say this about the mainstream media getting called on the press room. I got half a question in today on this CrowdStrike issue that we've talked about many times on the show before. CrowdStrike are the only people, this Democrat-hired group, are the only people who were allowed to examine the DNC servers. We talked about this yesterday.
The DNC hired them and gave them their narrative.
Exactly,
the way, it was the Russians.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. How much you paying us? $250,000. Oh, they just said it was the Martians for as much as they paid him.
So there was a new executive order on cybersecurity that was announced today as well. And they had a representative, Tom. Look, I got James. I called Andrew McCabe James McCabe, so maybe I'm off on his name.
Close enough. They Tom
had a,
somebody.
But they
Tom,
had
Bill,
they had a
Mark.
Representative. I can tell you this. He was very tall.
Sergey?
No, very tall.
Okay.
Not Sergey. That was the Russians yesterday.
Okay.
So I can tell you he was very tall. That's what I can tell you for sure. And he was talking about, in cybersecurity, they want to work with private firms, including one person brought it up, that Facebook may be coming in. Now, I don't know if you've heard of this Facebook. It's very popular with the kids today. But by the way, we're on Facebook Live. I should point that out. We're on Facebook Live right now. By the way, I got to point this out. Anything I'm about to say about Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, if you're listening, just tune out right now. Just tune, tune away. Come back to Sputnik in about 5 minutes, okay? Just right now, tune out. Because we're on Facebook Live, and I don't want it to suddenly go dark. So,
yeah, seriously. They might cut the feed on us for a couple minutes.
If Mark Zuckerberg could just tune out. Okay, so I started to ask a question, and he did one of these moves. The guy who was speaking, the tall guy who was speaking, he did one of these moves where he stopped and he listened, and then he kept going, like, but you could hear me. You could hear me shouting briefly. But I said, the public wants to know if you're going to work with companies that are politically motivated like Facebook or like CrowdStrike. And I started to do it, but then the dude was walking out. And then Sarah basically waved me off, right, like, well, he's gone. It was sort of like hoping for an encore concert.
As soon as you said CrowdStrike, that wasn't happening.
Well, I know.
It was Lee Strike at that point.
Here's what's so crazy about that. That's exactly the question that the Trump administration should want asked in that briefing room in front of 4 million people. They should want me to bring up CrowdStrike because it's factually unassailable. Comey admitted the FBI never looked at the DNC servers. That's a huge issue. He admitted that CrowdStrike was the only people who looked at the DNC server. That's a huge issue. And we know that CrowdStrike had to retract their report. It makes me, oh my God, it makes me mental, Garland.
Well, here's the other part of it, because this kind of disrupts the entire argument about the, and I brought this up. Look, you know what? Okay, I'm on the left. I know, the Democratic establishment are no friends of mine. But, you know, I got to call them as I see them. There is an argument that there is a big discussion as to why Comey was let go. And part of the discussion that I've heard was the White House is saying that they weren't happy with the email investigation. Well, we've got two email investigations. We got one of them with the DNC servers, which Bernie people weren't happy with that investigation. But then we've got the other email investigation where we find out from the FBI acting director, Andrew McCabe, that the people under Comey, a number of people were not happy about it. And think about what he said, because he didn't just say they weren't happy. He spoke in the context of morale, which indicates that at some point had impact on morale. And he said, I think morale's been good, always been good. But, and you know what they say in politics, ignore everything that someone says before the word but. He says, but there were folks within our agency that were frustrated with the outcome, right? And some of these folks were, and he didn't say vocal, were very vocal about their concerns. He makes it clear that people were unhappy that Secretary Clinton wasn't charged and that they were loud about it. They were very unhappy. They were very frustrated. And my position is clear. He had to be one of them, because other than that, there is no other reason for him to bring that up unsolicited and unprompted in the context of morale, unless it was his position.
Well, here's the thing. Comey violated. Now, I'm going to give you a little, if you're listening at home and you'd like a little career advice, just come closer to your radio for a second, because this is important career advice. Whatever job you do, whatever vocation you choose, whatever you choose to pursue in life, don't do what James Comey did. Try not to publicly suck at it. This is my advice. Now, again, this may be controversial to some people. You can go two ways. You can be publicly good at something, or you can privately suck at it, right? Like, you can suck at it, but no one knows. But the problem James Comey had is he was smack your damn head sucky in public over and over again, where it's like, he's opening the investigation. He's not opening the investigation. He's mildly nauseous that of things he did. No one made him do that stuff. And then the final straw, part of the final straw, I think, was the statement he made about the Huma Abedin.
He got the numbers totally messed up.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, and here's the other thing. The Hillary people were freaking out the day before. Oh, he got his numbers messed up. This is terrible. This is injustice. Must not stand. And then when he got fired, it was contradictory. Now they're upset. You were pretty much calling for his head on a platter the day before. And then the next day. Well, here's the other reason.
Let's switch sides. That was just me banging the microphone. Yeah. Let's switch sides of the table, though. Because you're doing a great point of making a Trump supporter's point here. It's fantastic. You just called out Democrat hypocrisy. So I can sit on, if I sit on your side where all the Ben and Jerry's is, right? That's where all the leftists.
Hypocrisy is all it is.
Okay. Well, it's but they're Democrats, so it's Democrat hypocrisy. But it's a great point. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders made it today too. You're making it as well. The Democrats are complete hypocrites. We talked about this yesterday. Complete hypocrites on this issue. And again, they're doing it so they can promote this bogus Russia narrative that they've been pushing for months and months now. And the only reason it's continued to go on. Sarah Huckabee Sanders made a great point today. She called the media out. She said they're obsessed with this and the American people aren't. And here's the thing, Garland. What part of why I'm so frustrated, aside from the fact that I'm cold, wet, and miserable, aside from that, is that...
You're an FBI agent? Because
no,
according to McCabe,
no,
much of those are
I'm a Russian propagandist, technically. Technically.
Oh, excuse
my
me.
Job description. But part of the reason I'm so frustrated by this whole thing is I would love nothing better for us to not have to talk about this every fracking
exactly.
day.
Well, let me tell you why Andrew McCabe, that is his name, Andrew McCabe brought this up. I tell you why, another reason I believe why he brought this up. So here's something that's coming out. Because Secretary Clinton wasn't charged, he's looking bad. So they're now bringing up the fact that his wife, who is in Virginia, she apparently, shortly after the email investigation was opened against Secretary Clinton, she was urged by Governor Terry McAuliffe, a close Clinton confidant, to run for a statewide office. And they gave her, according to the numbers I'm getting, upwards of $800,000 from PACs that are controlled by this Clinton confidant, right?
That's
so
right.
This is McCabe's wife. I believe the other situation that McCabe is looking at, he's saying, wait a minute. I wanted Secretary Clinton charged, and now she didn't get charged, and now everybody's going to come after me and say, darn it, whether it's true or not, the fact of the matter is people are going to come after him now and say, you know what? Your wife got $800,000 from the Clinton people, and that's why Clinton wasn't charged. And I think he wants it out there because he's going to look really, really bad. And let's face it, doesn't it look really, really bad that she wasn't charged?
Well, I'll tell you this. McCabe is not at all popular on the right. I mean, I can tell you that from my readers, the people on the right, they don't trust McCabe at all. And the fact, now, again, Sanders was asked about this at the press briefing today. Does the acting director have the full confidence of the president? This is the other thing that was weird in the press room. They kept peppering her yesterday and today with these questions about, like, well, you said that the employee, you said that Comey has the full confidence of the president. The president said last week he has the full confidence. Here's the thing.
You ever watch sports?
No, right. You say you love your wife until the divorce. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like the day before the divorce, it's like, do you love your wife? By the way, I love my wife. If my wife is listening, I love you, honey. This is nothing. Don't read anything into this. But you do. By the way, that's... What I'm about to say just is made what I just said
just
really bad.
Boy,
I just
you're in a world and you just messed that up.
But here's the deal. By the way, I'm so dead. If I file for divorce tomorrow, you won't see me again because I'll be murdered. But here's the thing. The day before you get divorced, if someone says, do you love your wife? The right answer is yes. Because if the answer is,
look.
You spilled the beans,
right?
How do
you know an NFL coach is going to be fired? The owner, they ask the owner, are you going to fire Sam Weiss, who got fired like 97 times?
Yeah.
Are you going to fire Sam Weiss? Sam Weiss has the full confidence of me, my
right.
family, the general manager, the cheerleaders, everyone. Next day, he's out of here. He's gone. So, of course, that's what anyone in charge is going to say about someone that they're an administrator over.
And I just wish someone in the press briefing room would, I wish the press secretary would say that. I wish they would just say, hey, guys, you know the game here. Guys and gals, you know the game.
Let's not pretend that that's
right.
not what's said.
Right. When you ask us, does someone have the full confidence, it's a semi-gotcha softball question. We're going to say yes, and then when we fire them, we're going to say,
so the
not anymore.
The question, I don't know, we're getting towards the end. So the question to me that arises from this McCabe statement is, how can the Clinton people continue to argue that James Comey deliberately torpedoed her to ensure that she lost, if in fact he had all the heat coming from him from behind And his people that he worked with were saying, you should charge her with a crime, which, let's face it, it's kind of hard to run for president if you're charged with a felony.
I'll tell you,
so
how can
you say both of them are true?
I'll tell you how the Clintons get away with it. And you don't like this because you like to, I know you don't like to admit when Democrats, you like to call them neocons.
Neoliberals, I call
them. You're critical of them, but you're not critical in this way. The media clearly. The way they get away with it is the media clearly buoys along a Democrat narrative. Now, the fact that some Democrats are warmongers like Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer and some of these other people, okay, yes. So they will go along with a warmongering narrative. But the fact is, there's no way you can look at the media narrative and go, well, they're clearly biased for Republicans. They're not. They're biased for Democrats.
The establishment. Establishment bias, and they will be establishment. They will always take the position of the establishment.
But when the Democrat and the Republican establishments disagree, they always go with the Democrats. Period. The end. In every case,
neither
they
one
go
of us fall into either of the establishment characters.
I agree. We're cool. I agree, so, Garland. You know, and I are definitely cooler than everybody else. But
that's what Rachel Maddow will be calling us: Kremlin puppets, right?
Well, yeah.
But she called me that, you know, I was a Bernie supporter. So
there we go. Yeah. She called you that before you were working here. So,
yes, that's
so
right.
There it goes. In round three, we're going to talk about a favorite topic of mine, Democrat bullying. Have they gone too far? We'll find out next. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
We are back with round three of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Hey, before we get into round three, you should really tell your friends about the show. I just got to point that out. I'm just doing a little interstitial advertising and pointing out that we are here every day, 4 to 5 live. We are also available on Facebook Live if you want to look at us. If you're listening and you're like, this sounds so awesome, how would it look? You can find that out on Facebook Live. And also,
Sputnik,
of course,
Sputnik News page. Just look up Sputnik News.
Sputnik News page, where Garland looks fabulous, and I need my beard, and I need less chins. I'm just going to point that out. But you can also check us out on the Sputnik website. You can also check us out on Spreaker. You can check us out other places as well.
You can Twitter, at Stranahan, or at Garland Nixon.
Sure.
You can follow us. We're always putting out our, letting you know when we're going to be on and what we're doing.
And I'm just going to let you know that because the feedback I get, Garland, from my peeps, as the kids say, my peeps, or as MC Hammer once said to me, my tweeps. And by the way, that's literally true. MC Hammer said that to me. I'm not joking, by the way. And then he hugged me. There we go. He called me one of his tweeple. This is a true story. And yes, that MC Hammer, because there's no other MC Hammer. But I want to point that out because the feedback I get on the show is very good, and I get the people like the show. They can see that we're doing something different, and so I'm just going to urge you to share it with people. Now, on to attacking Garland. So here's the thing, Garland.
Wait
a minute. No, I just thought I'd do a little switch there. But so here's the thing. Your tweeple, the Democrats, let's talk about your people. The Democrats are a bunch of bullies. That's what's going on. And this is all they've got. Now, I'm calling you out on the carpet here because you're on the board of the ACLU. You're very proud of that. And the ACLU is very proud that they support free speech. So I'm going to just give you a basic principle here. I would give this same principle to my children. I just showed Garland a picture of my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old. I have cute kids, which explains that I must have a gorgeous wife, and I do, because how would I get cute kids otherwise? It's simple genetics. My point here, though, is that I would tell the same thing to my kids. Yelling at people is not free speech. Trying to stop someone else from talking is not free speech. It's the opposite of free speech. It's bullying behavior. And that is all the Democrats have left. All they have left now, you can see this on college campuses, coast to coast, with the Antifa groups and with these protests. And I'm going to give two examples of this real briefly. But I want you, Garland, as a Democrat ACLU supporter, I want you to come down hard on these Democrats and say what they're doing is wrong bullying. Let me give two examples. Betsy DeVos, our Secretary of Education, and by the way, here's how Republican I am. Betsy DeVos, are too moderate for me, Secretary of Education. I'm going to point that out. She's too moderate for me. She really is. By the way, this is going to make, by the way, if you're a Democrat, I'm sorry your head just exploded all over your windshield, but it's true.
Too moderate for you, probably.
She is too moderate for me because as a homeschooler, for instance, she's too into Common Core and she's not enough into homeschooling, and I'll just leave it at that. But Betsy DeVos was giving the commencement address recently. She was shouted down. By the way, here's what I would say to my kids. Stop being rude. Go sit in the corner. You're on timeout. And some college administrator needs to say that to these safe space snowflakes. Go sit down. Shut up. Stop being rude or you're going to get kicked out of here and you're going to have to go back to mommy and daddy and live in their basement. Now, MacArthur, the congressman who the MacArthur Amendment is named after, MacArthur is a congressman from New Jersey. Oops, I hit them. Why do I keep hitting this thing? I'm going to blame the microphone.
Because you don't have a tambourine.
That would be good. Yeah, it could be a little more rhythmic. It'd be like Josie and the Pussycats if I had a tambourine. But the MacArthur Amendment that got the Republican repeal and replace bill through was named after MacArthur. MacArthur is a moderate, Congress MacArthur is a moderate Republican from New Jersey. He did a town hall last night. 5 hours of getting shouted at by rude people. Hey, rude people, sit down, shut up, and go back to New Jersey. Oh, wait, you're already in New Jersey. But anyway, the point is, can people just be civil? Now, look, I've spoken. Now I'm going to let you speak. But the minute you start speaking, I'm going to shout at you and yell at you and interrupt you.
Well,
Okay, stop.
In case you haven't noticed, I was doing like the students the whole time. I had my back to Lee, you know.
That's fine. But I really, is civility dead, Garland?
So let me say this.
And why did you Democrats kill it?
There was a lot of talk on the internet about the DeVos. There were a lot of people that were highly offended by that based on some statements that she made, which she retracted, but they were just really, I mean, the statement she made about, you know, the HBCUs being pioneers was pretty. For those of you who don't know, this was one of the major things that a lot of people were offended by. She said, historically black colleges and universities about them, she said they were real pioneers when it comes to school choice. They're living proof that when more options are provided to students, they're afforded greater access and greater quality. You know,
why is that offensive?
If I got to explain why that's offensive, no, boy, are you out of touch.
No, please do.
They didn't have choice.
Explain why that's
offensive.
She said
they're pioneers when it comes to choice. They didn't have a choice. They could only go to black schools. There was no, if they had choice, they'd have went to Michigan or what have you.
Howard still exist? That was, in fact, a pioneering thing. And by the way,
but it wasn't a pioneer of choice.
Lots of ethnic groups face discrimination, and slavery is clearly on a different level.
Right.
However, it is not so clearly on a different level that, in fact, it was not. She was praising them.
What I'm saying. She was praising them allegedly in a way shows that she is absurdly out of touch with reality. You're saying that people who couldn't go to any white schools were great pioneers of choice. In fact, that was the opposite of choice. Choice would have meant that they could go to any schools. They couldn't go to any of the other schools. So this was the opposite of choice. That being said, so what happened? I applaud the students for this reason. Yes, I believe in free speech.
Oh, my God.
And free speech. Speech means the freedom to protest. Too many times conservatives say free speech because they want to say whatever it is they have to say, and they don't want anybody to say I don't like it. They don't want people to protest it. It's free speech one way. I can stand up and say I hate whatever, I love whatever, but when somebody comes back and says, hey, I disapprove of that or protest it or whatever, then they're out of line. No, free speech goes both ways, number one. Number two,
but free speech isn't shutting people
because
up.
I applaud these students because you know what? We discussed what happened out in Berkeley. Right. And we both said, look, you know, we don't want to see any violence, people running around with, you know, people punching each other, fighting, none of that. These students weren't punching. They weren't fighting. This was calm. It was planned. It was calculated. They booed. They heckled. They turned their back. They didn't want her there. They weren't happy with her there. Eventually, by the way, incidentally, I've been to Bethune-Cookman, the BCC Wildcats. I've been there. It's in Daytona Beach. I was there many, many years ago. My very best friend played football for Bethune-Cookman and graduated. So I used to go there and hang out. So a beautiful place in Daytona. But the bottom line is, so I applaud these students because what they did, they demonstrated their disapproval, but they didn't protest. They didn't turn anything over. They didn't, you know, like students when they win or lose a basketball game, you know, wherever, the University of Maryland, whatever, they burn couches in Route 1. They didn't burn any couches on Route 1. They simply registered their displeasure. And so I applaud the way that they did it. I applaud this as opposed to something that was more violent or some of the other actions that we, in fact, you should be saying, I was unhappy with the people in Berkeley who didn't want Mayo there or didn't want Ann Coulter there. Wouldn't it have been far better for them to have registered their protest in a nonviolent manner? Nobody gets arrested. Nobody's in trouble. And they do it this way. And here's the bottom line. Students, historically, everybody knows young people are going to protest. They did it legally. They used their constitutional rights. Excuse me. They exercised their constitutional rights. And I applaud them for doing it. And if I was a student there, I'd probably join them.
Okay. So here's the thing. First off, I just want to clear up one thing in this. Let's take Howard University, for instance. Okay. Howard University was, I just looked this up because I wanted to be sure on this. Howard University was formed when? It was formed 1867, yep. A couple of years after the Civil War. Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, now you're saying black people weren't allowed to go to college. They weren't allowed to go to college.
Well, we know that's true. I'm not saying it. It's a fact.
Okay, well, explain to me who Richard Theodore Greener is.
The guy that started...
He went to Harvard. He graduated right around that time. How did he do it? He's the first black graduate of Harvard right around
Black people went to Harvard. Get out of here. What are you trying to say? That black people went to Harvard on the right? So one black person went to Harvard in 1864, and that means that black people did have choice?
I'm saying one person is not no people. And he went on to become dean of Harvard's law school. Right. And by the way, he was a Republican. I got to point out that's the other thing to note about him is he was a Republican. That's worth noting historically.
In the 1860s, I'd have been a Republican.
There's still time, Garland.
All they got to do is go back to those kind of policies.
We're going to get you in a MAGA hat soon enough. Don't you worry. But I'm just pointing out that when you act as though Howard University was an option, it was an option, and this was post-Civil War. So I'm just going to point out that there are some factual things that need to be pointed out here.
When you say option, explain what you mean. I don't understand. Not going to college or going to Howard University was the option?
No, because, first off, this is a topic for another discussion.
Yeah, you're right.
My point is it's a myth to act like no black people were getting into any colleges at the time, and it had a form because it was somehow like it happened after the Civil War, and it happened around the same time that Harvard was having its first black graduate.
It's not a myth.
Well, it is, but let's keep going. And by the way, the worst thing that's going on right now, and I've talked about this, is that somehow we've ended up in this thing. Why do we have segregated homecomings now in places like the University of Missouri at Columbia? Do you know why? Because the black students want it. That's another topic. But they want their own black homecoming. They want their
totally
own black
unrelated
prom. That is black racism. Pure and simple. That's exactly what's going on there. But now that's socially acceptable, it's politically correct somehow to say that, no, we want our own. This is not what civil rights was about. But I digress.
Yes, because they still did the right thing to heckle Betsy DeVos.
No.
Isn't that the First Amendment rights? Didn't they exercise that? I thought you were a constitutional man.
Again, shutting down someone's speech. Your First Amendment right is to state your opinion. It's to say your opinion. It's not just trying to shut somebody down by yelling at them. Now, let's talk about what happened with MacArthur. These town halls, which the media loves reporting on, they love talking about them. NPR loves talking about it. I listen to NPR every morning because I like to listen to the left and the right. I like to not be in a media bubble. So NPR...
Why don't you listen to town? To some, where are you going to get the left from?
Oh, yeah, I know. I know NPR is not left enough for you.
No, are you kidding me?
So NPR, in their morning newscast, live from Washington, this is NPR. You know, that very dulcet tone, sort of.
Yeah.
right?
That academic kind of
that
sound.
That NPR. I did an interview at NPR a week or so ago in D.C., and I got to actually get into the microphone and go, live from Washington, this is Lee Stranahan for NPR. This morning in the news, and I got to do that. So, see, I can do that. I can talk an NPR way. By the way, if you're hiring NPR, I'm not available 4 to 5, but perhaps an early or a later shift. But here's what NPR does. I heard them this morning. They said, at a town hall in New Jersey, you know, they go,
town halls are popular.
People complain.
They're a big thing now, but here's my point.
They're being organized.
We don't want them organized.
These town halls, that's a little, by the way, it's a little Taxi Driver reference
for you. Yeah, I got it.
Robert De Niro film. But inspired an assassination. A little Taxi Driver reference. But an attempt at assassination is a great movie. Scorsese, great movie. But they are organized by the left. These town hall demonstrations are community organized. And by the way, we should talk about this at some point. The scariest thing in the news we haven't talked about yet. The scariest thing happened in the last week, which is Barack Obama, who, again, look, let's admit it, looked fabulous. He looked great. He was very, over in Italy getting interviewed.
He had the little vest thing going on.
He had his shirt down, no undershirt, just sort of, it looked fabulous. So Barack Obama, this is the scariest thing I've heard all week. I'm going to be honest with you, and I've been listening to North Korea and Syria news. The scariest thing I've heard all week is that Barack Obama is organizing a community organizing institute to teach activism, to which I say, well, duh, that's the business he's in. He's in the organizing business, right? And so that's what he's going to be doing. But these town halls are a bunch of zombie Democrats who are fed their talking points, wound up, and then sent out to attack Republicans and to do what Democrat bullies do best, which is shout at people.
So let's talk about one of those zombie Democrats who was wound up. A zombie who had no idea what was going on. Why, a mindless fiend. If he'd bitten Mr. MacArthur, he'd have probably turned him into a zombie, and then we'd have zombie Republicans.
That's a very good description, Garland. I agree with all of that. This particular
zombie Democrat, a man who said his wife had battled breast cancer, stood to say MacArthur was the single greatest threat to my family in the world.
Yes, that's
so why
a zombie.
Were people there?
This that's is, a his zombie. Wife that's somebody had, who's been greatly misinformed.
His wife had breast cancer. So here's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. His wife has
if
breast cancer and MacArthur's
you can't
the threat.
Say
MacArthur's
that
the threat.
A person whose family is facing a significant health threat doesn't have a reasonable motivation to go address someone and angrily, which I may do if I were in that case, angrily address someone who they perceive as a threat to their health care. And I would agree. I would agree with him that that man's a threat. You may consider it false perception.
Make the factual case how he's a threat. Make the case right now. You have a microphone. Make the case.
Oh, well, the case is, well, let me start by saying this. I don't believe that the Republican version of health care is ever going to get through. But if I did believe that it would get through, then numbers of people are going to lose their health care. It's a terrible, horrible, frightening. First off,
you're conflating health care with health insurance, which are two completely different things. Health care is not health insurance. Second off, prove it. MacArthur's amendment was all about protecting people with pre-existing conditions. So therefore, the zombie whose wife tragically has breast cancer and will pray for her, and it's horrible. But the fact is, Obamacare was no help to that woman. Period.
Because what we need is what people like Bernie and I say. It's very simple. This is not hard to do. All you have to do, let me give you the answer right now, and MacArthur wouldn't have to get raked over the coals for screwing up everybody's health care, which he is validly getting raked over the coals because he is doing. Simply, let me give everybody the answer. Take the age limit off of Medicare. Simply say, look, I don't care if you're 21 or you're 51. Medicare right now, 93% of the people in Medicare are happy with it. It works very well. And if you open Medicare up for younger people, it would work even better, because right now Medicare has a bunch of older people who are very sick. You add a bunch of younger people who aren't, who are putting money in it, and it's going to be even healthier. 93% of the people in it are happy. You open Medicare, you don't have to say, oh, the government's in this. You don't have to say we're going to come up with some new health plan that's going to wreck everything that people are scared of. You can say we got a health care plan. And it works, and the people are in it, they're happy. We just have an arbitrary age limit of 65, number one. Number two, you don't have to get in. There's no requirement that you join Medicare. You can get anywhere you want to, but if you want Medicare, you simply buy in, and then you have a good health care that everybody's happy with.
Now, notice
that's the solution.
Now, notice you made your pitch for socialized medicine there, and by the way, let's be real clear, that's what you're talking about.
No, socialized medicine.
Yeah, yes,
it's
is.
Actually, it is just single payer.
What you're talking about is single payer, which is a trick, a linguistic trick that Democrats like to play, because they know they know that single payer, socialized medicine, single payer sounds better than socialized medicine, but it's the same thing. But notice I didn't shout you down, which is the point. I allowed you to continue to spew about socialized medicine, and I'll let you do it tomorrow, because we'll be back again. We're here
That's
every
kind of you, my friend.
Monday through Friday, 4 to 5. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.